we're at the part in the Parsha where Moshe criticizes the Jewish people for what happened with the spies, the Meraglim. And it says this is a climatic moment in Moshe's speech where he recalls this Aveira. And he says, we left Har Sinai, we crossed a large, large wilderness where there were many serpents, some as thick as beans and scorpions as big as bows. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu took all this away from you. He smoothed out the land. And you were going at a tremendous clip, and you were going to Eretz Yisroel. And didn't you have the realization as yet that whatever perils might be on your way, God would take away from it? Moshe took pains during the wanderings to tell Bnei Yisroel about the wonderful land they were coming to, how fertile the land is. And we see that when the Meraglim actually came, the exceptionally great large fruits they received. The Jewish people arrived in Kadesh, and they could see Eretz Yisroel from the Amori hilltops, and they could see this magnificent country before their eyes. And Moshe said, I taught you again at that point in time that you had no need to be afraid of whichever enemies you would come against. And somehow you decided you needed to send spies to determine the best way of, conquest of the land, to come up with a strategic plan of conquering it. He says, initially when you came to me, I realized it was wrong. And I had feelings that this was not a good thing to do. And another way I realized that there was something problematic is that it wasn't the general way requests were made. If the people felt a need, they would go through the communication process. They would normally go to the leader of the Shevet, and they would discuss the issue, and then the leaders would bring it to Moshe. He said, all of a sudden, I have an angry mob, total hefkeris, no organization, and you're coming before me with this request. He said, you attempted to camouflage the fact that for whatever reason, you were now having a crisis of emunah, of faith. And you felt that we're only going to do what's normal. We're going to take scouts, send them out to determine the strategic manner in which we're going to go forward. You said you wanted to know where the weaknesses of the enemy was. You also were afraid that if they had precious items, they would try to bury them. You wanted to know where they were. You were basically saying, we want this conquest to be as successful as possible. He said, intuitively, I, Moshe Rabbeinu, knew there was something wrong. And he said, I tried to use reverse logic on you. And I said, If you want to send spies, go ahead. And I was hoping that with my quick agreement to the request, you would realize, hey, if Moshe is saying we can send spies, he obviously has no reservations whatever what they could find. He has no objections. Obviously, Moshe knows this is a perfect place, and there's no need to be concerned. And yet, you didn't take up the mantle, so to speak, and desist. You persisted, and you kept persisting, and therefore, I chose one designated person from each tribe, but not from Shevet Levi, because in this rabble-rousing, there were no members of Levi there. They had complete emunah, and they had no need for spies. And we know the story. We know that we had a problem. 10 of them came back with a report that demoralized you. And only Yehoshua ben Nun and Kolov ben Yefuna came back and said, the land is not only exceptionally great, but HaKadosh Baruch Hu is giving it to us. We don't have to worry at all. He said, you had a choice. Who were you going to listen to? 10 Rishayim or 2 Tzadikim? And you acquiesced, and what you did is you listened to the Rishayim, and you basically went into a frenzy. You took your children in your hands and you cried, whoa, what's going to happen? Our children are going to be basically overcome. They're going to be destroyed. They will be killed. Or worse still, they'll be put into slavery. And you spoke the blasphemous words. You said, God should not have taken out of Athauta Mitzrayim. There we had irrigated streams. There we had the Nile. And Eretz Yisrael, as we know, depends on rain. He says, God would not have taken us from the fertile basin of their existence to a naturally dry land unless it were a negative desire on the part of Hashem. And Moshe said, he said, I can't believe it. You elevated Mitzrayim over Eretz Yisroel. I kept telling you, you wouldn't be here now if not for HaKadosh Baruch Hu's love and special care of you. But yet you didn't take regard. And ye said, had others who were from the land come and given us a report, we might have been able to put it aside. But here, you picked 10 people that you determined to be righteous originally, and you sent them on our mission. These people are, right? They're our blood. They're from us. They have our best intentions in mind. If they say this is an impossible mission, how can we ignore what they're saying? And they said, they became scholars. You know that we have a concept that When two witnesses give testimony, we believe them. Here we've got five times two, and they're all saying the same thing. How can we ignore the message? And Moshe said, I started arguing. I said, again, look at your very existence today. You depend on Hashem for everything. Stop for a minute and think. You've got the Ananei HaKavod, which nobody ever had before. You have the well. You have the mon. You live in a methodology of nes. You live a miracle with every breath of your mouth. God has treated you like his little baby. He has coddled you in every way, carried you through the desert. And even though I can delineate the number of times you actually sinned, you're still here today. This was, we're told, the 10th incident of rebellion in the Midbar. The generation rejected Eretz Yisrael, and we know that was Tisha B'Av. And unfortunately, that's the prelude to the tragedies that have occurred throughout history on Tisha B'Av, because Hashem said, it's a night you cried for nothing, and you're going to unfortunately receive due reason to do so. Right, we know that Yehoshua and Kalev were granted special areas in Eretz Yisrael because of their loyalty, and the Gezerah that they spend up until year 40 in the desert was sealed at this point. Moshe then turns to the story of the Mafilim, the Jewish militants who then had a change of heart and decided to go to Eretz Yisrael on their own. They just said, okay, we'll go now. And Moshe said, don't. God is no longer with you. That you said, we have sinned. Let us go out and do battle. Let us, in this way, basically try to achieve atonement for what we've done.
Thank you very much.
And a number of you, right, began to go up to Eretz Yisrael. Immediately, the Amorites swarmed out like bees. It was a swarm, one after another. And they beat you. As soon as they struck you, they themselves died. They were being treated like a bee that when it stings, it dies. When you saw this, this had to be evident that what it was Hashem acting the way, taking control. You all cried. Hashem would not listen to your tefillos at this stage of the game. He would not alter his gezerah of the period in the desert. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu acted thereafter in a merciful way, in that the next place you stayed was Kadesh. Kadesh, And Hashem let you stay there for 19 years. Okay. Thereafter, Moshe was given the rules that there would be no capture of Seir, Amon, and Moav. The Jews had to respect God's desire that these nations not meet their just reward at this stage. Seir, we know, is Edom. Hashem said, when you cross Seir, don't take anything from them by force. If you want any of their resources, water, grain for bread, etc., you must pay for it. Hashem gave you, and Hashem said, you have ample monetary resources to do this. The time has not yet come for the retribution against Esav. Hashem said, if Esav comes and antagonizes you, which is what happened because the Jews asked for rite of passage, Hashem said, walk away. Right, Hashem said, you are going to be saved by the power of Torah from Edom in the long term. But I do not want to basically, take a deposit on that now. Then we move to Moav, right? He said, I was certain we would be required to attack Moav. The same way God had said to us, we had to take revenge against the Midianim because of what they had done to cause the 24,000 Jews to die in the plague. The Moavim, who, at the instance of Balak, had hired these guys and had started this whole thing, in my mind, seemed to be apt for destruction. But HaKadosh Baruch Hu said, Moshe Rabbeinu, your thoughts are not my thoughts. I do not want Moav destroyed. You can frighten them, and you can take spoils from them. And it says the Torah will tell us a little later on why Hashem saved them. With Amon, Hashem said, just walk away. Don't take any spoils and don't even cause them fear. And it's pointed out, Moav and Amon were from Lot's daughters. Right? And Lot had a certain schus, he had a certain merit that when he traveled with Avram and Sarah, and Avram would say, Sarah is my wife, he didn't basically say, no, Sarah is my sister, he didn't go ahead and betray the confidence. Therefore, in some way, Lot caused Avraham not to be in danger of being killed, and therefore he had some merit. And we know that his daughters who spawned these two nations did it only because they wanted humanity to continue to exist. They weren't interested in an incestuous relationship with their father. He, on the other hand, it says, may have been of a different mind. But they felt they were the only survivors left when the Stome and all the five cities were overturned. And we know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu, for whatever reason, needed to take whatever Kedusha there was still in Lot and his daughters and bring them back into Klal Yisroel, such that Rus became the mother of David HaMelech and Moshiach. Rus and Nama. Nama was from Ammon, and she had a descendant called Nama, which means sweet, gentle, and Nama also married into King David's house. She married, right, she was Jewish, and she married Rehoboam. She married Rehoboam's father, and she became the mother of the king. We're told that the Torah does not go into great detail of what happened when the Jews came to the border of Ammon. Did they listen to Hashem's word? Perfectly, didn't they? And he says, we don't hear anything about this until the time when we read the Haftorah concerning Yiftach. The king of Ammon wanted to go to war against Yiftach, right? To capture certain lands that he claimed the Jews had taken from Ammon. And Yiftach said, the Jews never conquered any of your land, neither Ammon and Moab. They tried to make peace, and they tried to pay to cross the lands, but they couldn't. You are claiming lands that once were yours. However, look at history. Sihon took them from you. Once they became Sihon's, you had no claim to them. Moshe and the Jews conquered them from Sihon. And they said, walk away, because you're not going to be successful if you go to war against us. And they said, all the nations know that HaKadosh Baruch Hu fights for the Jews. And if you're making inappropriate claims of territory 300 years after Yetzias Mitzrayim, well, you don't have a chance. This king, in his hubris, decided, I don't care, and went to war and got totally defeated. And so we see that the Jews never violated taking the lands they weren't allowed to. Moshe then turns to the war with Sihon and his army. Hashem said at that day to Moshe, I'm going to make your name even greater throughout the world by doing fantastic miracles. I sent, Moshe said, a delegation to Sihon again asking us to let us pass his country. And once again, we were rejected. And Sihon was so pompous and he felt he could totally destroy us. He didn't even bother to try to get a hold of Og, his brother, the other great giant, and try to beat the Jews. HaKadosh Baruch Hu gave us the ability to beat, smite Sihon and his mighty son. We defeated their soldiers, we took their possessions, and we wiped out the people. The day that the battle happened, we were in the middle of the battle when the sun was about to set, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu delayed sunset until the battle ended. And this is one, it's the number of times that HaKadosh Baruch Hu did this. It said, for three tzaddikim, it happened for Moshe here. It said that Yehoshua had a similar experience. It was even more pronounced. The Givonim became allies of the Jews, and the five Amori kings went after them. Moshe sent the army, or Yehoshua sent the army after them to get them, and they were devouring and destroying this enemy, and the sun was going to set. Lifting his hands toward heaven, Yehoshua said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, Shem HaMeforesh, great name, and he said, sun facing Givon, stop. Do not continue your orbit. And the moon facing the valley of Ayalon, you too stop your orbit. The sun said to Yehoshua, I don't take orders from you. I was made by Hashem. Yehoshua said, you can be silent and desist according to my command, because I was never silent from learning Torah. And I'm not afraid of you, because if you're saying that you have the responsibility that in orbit to sing Shira, I will sing Shira in your place. It says this was Erev Shabbos, and it lasted 36 hours, and it only ended after the war was won. This was the longest extension, it says in time. Moshe received a few hours. And it said, this talks about a prophecy that says that the children of Ephraim, Yehoshua, will achieve worldwide renown. This was something said in Bereishis. So it was obviously part of the bracha that Yaakov Avinu had given that Sheva. Okay.